guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I come up on 4:04 in the evening. Felger Mass here on a reentry Monday. We've done a lot of Bruins, even hit on the Masters, and done a lot of Red Sox Yankees. All those things on the table. Let's give you one more, and that is the latest on Rob Gronkowski. Reading Karen Garegian, a story she had in the Herald on Sunday about Rob Gronkowski and timing to poop or get off the pot, or just the general nature of where Gronkowski stands with the team right now. And she dropped this into like the third or fourth paragraph, kind of bearing the lead there. KG, you trying to slip that one by?
Classic beat person move, though. I used to do it all the time.
No question.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to get in trouble, so you buried it in like the third or fourth graph.
You got something really good and juicy? So you just sort of put it in the body and slip it in there versus making a big headline out of it and making a big story out of it, because then the team comes back and says, well, why making a big deal out of that?
You say, I'm not. I put it in the fourth graph.
So you put it in the fourth graph. It doesn't get the headline, but you intentionally bury the lead.
No, what that is that's a veteran move is what that is.
Hey, you guys got a twinkle in your eye talking about that.
Oh, yeah. No, I used to do it all the time.
Classic
right?
Move.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was great at it, too.
Beat guy 101, in fact. But KG writes, in the middle of her story, at one point early last season, the hoodie chastised Gronk in front of the players for being a TB12 client, according to a source. So maybe that was Belichick's not-so-subtle way of trying to keep everyone from jumping ship on the team's training staff. So I'm just going to pick this up because NBC Sports Boston had a bunch of stuff on it as well. And when they were reprinting that quote, they wrote that Mike Giardi of NBC Sports Boston reported earlier in the offseason that Patriots players, specifically Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady, were quote-unquote miserable under Belichick's regime. While Tommy Curran reported Gronk felt persecuted to a degree last season. Curran tweeted today. Fresh tweet from Curran. Source told me that during camp, when Gronk was performing poorly, he was called out in front of the team for being ineffective. Change in regimen was derisively referred to as the reason. This was a big part of Gronk's irritation that lasted all year. So again, Karen Garegian says Belichick chastised Gronkowski in front of the players for being a TB12 client. Curran said that when Gronk was performing poorly during camp, he was called out in front of the team for being ineffective, and the change in regimen was derisively referred to as the reason. So Belichick's in a team meeting showing some film, Gronkowski getting beat on a block, and Bill says, oh, how those resistance bands working out for you, Gronk? Or what, the wheat germ shakes? Can't get you to set that edge? And something like, I just obviously
you
made that up.
You used to be one of our strongest players. What happened to your strength?
So what I was just going to say, I would love to know a little bit more if it was particularly on a blocking play. Like something that would have required some sort of strength. But let's assume that it was. Because to me, that's got to be what it is. That Belichick looked at it and said, well, the reason why you can't hold the block, Gronk, is because you're 15 pounds lighter and you're not as strong as you were last year because you're doing those stupid-ass resistance bands. Come in here and do your squats.
To me, it could be that. And that's another thing. The team wanted Gronkowski to squat. Many people have talked about this. As most football coaches and football trainers do, you squat. And leg day. And so Guerrero, though, is big on, well, you just had your third, fourth back surgery. Why do you want to put 400 pounds on your back and lift it? That doesn't seem very smart, which on the face of it is sort of commonsensical. I'm not saying that that's the wrong advice from Guerrero, but football teams like their players to lift weights. That's just sort of maybe the quarterback and the kickers can get away with something a little different. But when you're playing on the line of scrimmage against 300-pound men, typically they want you to lift some weights. So, like, I understand both sides of it. So that's something Bill could have done, but it really could have been anything. Because this is what you're hearing more and more, that Bill, you know, that's part of the beauty of Bill, that in some cases he treats these guys like everybody else. So, you know,
the star players, you
the
mean.
Stars. Okay. So from what I understand, like, there's been a lot of comments like that directed at these guys, Gronkowski and Brady. Oh, you guys got all the answers now. You guys got all the answers, your fancy videos and your trainers. And so, all right, you guys got all the answers, like that sort of thing. And Brady and Gronkowski are having a hard time handling it like they used to.
Okay, so my question is, does he do it to Brady too?
Yes. From what I understand, yep. Those kind of comments go Brady's way too.
Okay, well,
and that's why they're both sort of, that's why it's a Brady-Gronk thing.
Okay, well, then I feel a little bit better about it, because had this been him showing up Gronk in an effort to prevent the rest of the roster from sort of going to the dark side, as he would perceive it, then that's weak.
Well, no, I mean...
Go after Brady.
He does.
Okay, then fine.
And we read in that great piece by Wickersham that Brady's growing tired of the treatment. He was upset that he wasn't getting the Player of the Week award, like all these things. And that I'll go back and read the exact.
I remember. But this feels to me like the first time he's actually we've read that he has said out loud to a player, you know, oh, you're doing the TB12 method, pal. You know, you get all the answers.
I think the comments to Brady of this nature have been implied in all of the reporting we've heard about this.
Okay,
from
fine.
Curran, from Wickersham, from all of these guys.
Okay,
that Bill has been hard on Gronk and Brady. Like, he's hard on everyone for a million different reasons, but he's hard on those two players for this specific thing. And for the first time in 18 years, Brady and, you know, Gronk aren't responding to it. They're responding poorly to it.
Well, this all comes back to letting Guerrero in the room in the first place. Like, you know, so Bill's got no one to blame but himself on that one, but it's complicated now. Like, now what do you do? So if these guys want to go see Guerrero, Bill says, go ahead, go see him. Go see him out of the building. I mean, somewhere in here, Mike, they got to find common ground, right? So they're going to go see Guerrero, whether Bill likes it or not.
So who moves? Who moves to the middle?
Well, the players are going to have to move, but Bill's got to give a little bit.
Where?
When I say give a little bit.
Do you think he will?
No, just shut up about the comments. If they go see the guy outside the building, they go see the guy outside the building.
Get off their ass a little bit?
Yeah, just don't show them up about it, right? Because now, the problem is that even if they're going outside of the building, what happens when Gronk comes in and they say, do your squats, and he won't do them?
This is the issue.
Right? So now what?
This is an issue.
So like, you know, do you carry that over into playing time? You start disciplining the guy? I don't know. But this is the dilemma for letting him in the first place. So he screwed that up. I guess all I'm saying is, at some point, Bill has to take responsibility for making the mistake of letting Guerrero in there in the first place. That amplified the problem.
So how does he do that? To me, that's letting Guerrero back around. You did it already. You've already opened that can of worms.
Do you think Bill's going to do that?
No, of course not. And this is why this thing, it's not fixable. It's not, there's too many stubborn parties here. With Belichick and Gronkowski and Tom Brady, it doesn't feel like it's going to get fixed. It really doesn't.
Kraft's going to have to get involved. And he's going to have to say, look, here's what we're going to do. Because, look, even if Bill keeps Guerrero out of there, what's he going to do? Put a night watchman outside of TB12 and make sure no one goes in? These guys are going to go find Guerrero anyway. They're just going to do it outside the building. It'll be less convenient for them, but they're still going to go. And they're still going to show up and not do some of the things that he wants them to do. So if you're Bill, then what? Like, Kraft's going to have to get involved. I just don't see a way. Kraft's going to have to say to Bill, well, here's the reality of it. They're going to do it. And I made you trade Garoppolo, so you're certainly not going to piss off the quarterback anymore. So enough with that. And if you're not going to air him out, you're not airing Gronk out either. Get off their backs, let him go, and then we're in the building, and then he goes to Brady and says the same thing.
Get off their backs, Bill.
Well, with regard to that.
Yeah, no, let's see if that works. We are, it's my football team, right, Robert?
you forced my hand with one move, now you're telling me how to run the team further?
You may tell me how to talk to my players?
Yeah,
and I think with Brady,
it's never going to work.
That's not going to work.
Brady and Gronkowski,
not long term. It's not.
And this is where the Palace Q comes in, because they know he's not going to deal with that. He's not going to take, you know, being told how to run his team any further. He's going to probably want to walk if that's what he's told from the boss. What you want me to? You really want me to give in to these two players? I've done enough.
Gian Garesian of the Boston Herald over the weekend says at one point early last season, Belichick chastised Gronkowski in front of the players for being a TB12 client, according to a source. NBC Sports Boston's Mike Giardi has reported earlier in this offseason, the Patriots players, specifically Gronkowski and Brady, were miserable under Belichick's regime. While Tommy Curran reported that Gronk felt persecuted to a degree last season, Curran tweets today, source told me that during camp, when Gronk was performing poorly, he was called out in front of the team for being ineffective. Change in regimen was derisively referred to as the reason. This was a big part of Gronk's irritation that lasted all year. And so that story continues. Your thoughts on this on a Reentry Monday right after this.
The Sports Hub.
Alternatives from New England Fat Loss.
NewEnglandFatLoss.com.
This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
One guy that we didn't think that we would be discussing the end of his career, I think, so soon about is Rob Gronkowski. You are seeing some more cryptic things on Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, as we're doing the show, I got a text from someone who is very tied into both camps, Gronkowski and Brady, and they're like, this stuff is real.
Yeah.
The Gronk stuff is real. Part of the thing with Gronk, they said, is the Planet players feel like they don't get respected enough, and they feel miserable about what's going on. A lot of it does tie around Alex Guerrero, and this is something obviously Tom Curran had written about when it came to Gronk, about not having fun. But that's the point, about they're looking at themselves. Rob obviously knows he's the best tight end in the league. Brady knows, despite his nature, that he knows he's the best quarterback to every play of the game. And they're looking at going, you're really going to bust our balls over Alex Guerrero? You're going to make people go up the hill to go see Alex? You're going to, as we saw on episode 5 of Tom vs. Time, the idea that you stick them on the table around Sterno cans in a suite to cover up the windows. Like, the feeling being, honestly, you can't just give us we can't have a room, we can't have the same access that we had. Isn't this work for us?
That's courtesy of our friends at NBC Sports Boston. We can pick up on this along with our Bruins, Masters, and Red Sox Yankees chatter here on a reentry Monday. Harry in Pittsfield on the Pats. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, Harry, this is Harry.
Hi, Harry.
Oh, what I wanted to talk to you about was Coach Belichick is the best coach, you guys know that, in football ever, I think. Now, I talked to a coach 30 years ago down in Florida. I'm a Tampa Bay Buck fan besides the Patriots since 1961. He said football's the hardest game to coach and manage because of the fact there's 22 guys on the field on every play. Basketball's got 5, baseball
Harry,
9.
We got it, babe. What's your point?
The point is you got to follow his lead. Who else has got 5 Super Bowl rings?
Okay, Harry, do you blame Robert Kraft for stepping in and telling him what to do with the quarterback last year?
He's the owner. There's always somebody over you.
So wait a minute. You just said you got to let him do it. He's the guy in charge. So how do you feel about the owner stepping in?
I had Eat Crow in my time, and I was the boss. Sometimes you got to bend, even if you're the boss. There's somebody always over you somewhere.
Okay, so
he has done a super job. Nobody's going to win that many. These players that are playing for him probably wouldn't have a ring, a lot of them,
okay,
if it wasn't for him.
So you think it's up to Brady and Gronkowski to step into line?
I think everybody should if they're working for somebody. Yeah, I had a step in line in my life.
Okay, babe, we all have.
He also cost them another ring, too, just a few months ago.
But generally speaking, I'm kind of with Harry. Brady and Gronk? Shut up, guys.
Chain of command.
Yeah. Well, except he's telling Bill to fall into line.
I thought he was telling the players to fall into line.
No, he means Bill's going to fall in under Kraft. Like,
no,
you said, you blame Kraft. And he said everybody's going to fall in at some point.
I'm trading Garoppolo, not on this particular thing. But I don't know.
He was chastising the players there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would tell Brady and Gronk to shut the hell up and just do what, you know, you want to go see the guy outside of the building, fine. But when you're in the building, you play by the team rules.
But it's also all of a sudden you can't handle Bill. I mean, I understand he's a hard guy to work for or work with. I mean, he's extremely difficult. So I get it. And the fact that Brady's done it for 18 years, like, he should get some sort of medal. Like, there's no doubt about it. And that's part of what makes Brady so special. Now, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, because I always, you know, Aaron Rodgers versus Brady and da-da-da. Aaron Rodgers had been drafted by the Patriots. Would Aaron Rodgers have 5 championships and da-da-da? And I think he'd have a couple for sure. I think they'd be very good for sure. But you know what? Rodgers would not put up with Bill for 18 years. He wouldn't, because he's not as tough as Brady or whatever. He's just got a whole different, like, it takes a special guy probably to put up with that for 18 years. Okay, so I give Brady credit for doing it. But now it's just a couple more. Like, all of a sudden, you're going to pull the diva act? Like, all of a sudden, it's like, don't talk to me like that? Come on, Tom.
So is it just about the way he talks to him, or is it about the fact that he makes it difficult for him to do it his way?
To do it his way, and Brady also thinks he's getting in the way of his business. I think that's part of it, too. And to which I would say, Tom, we're not here to service your business. I mean, the point of the Patriots is not to promote your brand. Like, that's, do that on your own time. And Brady's trying to combine the two. Like, getting all those players in there is an attempt to grow TB12 and the TB12 method.
And part of that lifestyle, though, is against how he's living his life, the new enlightened Tom Brady, who only wants to be around positive people all the time. You know, now that's a drag to be around Bill.
So that's a whole other side piece to it that's interesting, right? Like, I'm a positive person. And I'm about positivity. Like, how many times you got to hear Tom Brady say that?
So maybe
positivity.
It's got to be nauseous.
Oh my God! It's not. And then here comes, you know, Mr. Curmudgeon himself, well, Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe there's an edge on those comments when you really think about them.
Maybe so.
I mean, maybe they're directed at Bill. Like, shut the hell up with the negativity, Bill. Enough.
I would just say to Gronk and Brady, suck it up. You got a couple years left. You demanded to stay. You demanded to stay, knowing the conditions.
What if they're right? What if they're right that Guerrero's method is better? You know what I think of Guerrero, okay? I mean, I think a lot of us think it, but what if he's right?
Okay, answer your own question.
Well, then shouldn't Bill, isn't that what's best for the team?
Okay.
So shouldn't Bill get out of the way on that?
I think the football coaches and the football trainers should determine the coaching and the training of the team, not an outside guy. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. You fire them and you bring in the next guy. If Alex's method is preferred method, then fire the training staff and hire Alex. That's what I would say. It is dangerous to have an outside guy telling players that the team is giving you bad advice and doing it a wrong way.
You know
what?
That
is a recipe for disaster, as we are witnessing.
This is not going to be solved because they're going to go see the guy on their own. Whether they let him into the building or not, they're going to go see him on their own. And then the problem comes in again when they come in to do what the medical staff tells them and they won't do it. Then what?
We've got Joe in Lincoln. Hi, Joe.
Hey, first of all, before I go on, Brady, the guy who called from Philadelphia said elimination games, not game seven.
No, I know. So we're looking it up. We're going to give you the real numbers coming up.
But here's the thing. I think Brady blew it when he didn't retire after Atlanta. If you think about it, that was the logical time for him to retire. Guerrero goes away. He can flog his TB12 and go watch his kids play soccer. By the way, full disclosure, I went to TB12. But I said the secret is squeeze your glutes. That's the big secret of TB. I swear to God, this is true.
Yeah, it's good. It's good for your core. It's good for the whole thing. Yeah, squeeze your glutes.
It is. But I think, what does he really gain from hanging on? It's just, he can only lose from this point on, especially if Garoppolo keeps playing. So everybody was ready to move on from Brady. They really were. If Garoppolo
not everyone, but Joe.
I think most people.
Not Murray.
The coach was. Joe and Lincoln, when you say Brady should have retired after the Super Bowl, Bill Belichick hears that and says, exactly. You should have retired after the Super Bowl. Bill is saying to himself, this was coming, Robert. I told you this was all coming. The other kid could play, and Tom is getting a little too big for his britches. And the Alex thing is a pain, and Tom's getting a little big for his head, like we're not used to. And this is all coming to a head, and I'm telling you, now's the time. Go with the kid. You'll be better off in the long run. And I guarantee you, Bill is saying to Robert, I told you so. Now, Bill may be saying that all the way to the Super Bowl again, because I think you're going to be one of the best teams in football next year, and you're going to be right there again. Like, I'm not telling you they're going 7-9. But, like, all these sort of ancillary things around, I bet Bill's saying, I told you this was coming, Robert.
Yeah, the problem is that the owner has already empowered the quarterback.
Correct.
Listen, they're porked in the long term now. They're porked. They're not going to all of a sudden make up over this thing, because there's no way Brady's leaving Guerrero, and there's no way Belichick is letting him back in the building.
Tony,
that's it. That part of it's over. It's going to be there forever now.
Tony in the car, what do you got?
I am 100% agreeing with you, Michael. This is not a Guerrero issue. When you think about the Beatles, if everyone thinks Yoko Ono broke up the Beatles, John Lennon broke up the Beatles. Ono was the influence that basically sent Lennon off the rails, but this is all Brady. And if you guys go back, I forget which episode it was in the Tom versus Time when they're up in the Brokeback cabin up in Montana there. Watch how those guys turn on Edelman. They completely berate him because he took like a half day off to go bench press. And just, that is all Tom. Guerrero's on the side saying, well, you know, weightlifting has a part of the program, but it's Brady, and even Amendola saying, dude, what's your problem?
So, Tony, I know the exact scene you're talking about. Thank you for the call. I think that's just playful ball busting.
No, but he's right about the quarterback being the source of the problem. The quarterback, so this is another reason why I find it funny that Belichick is airing out Gronk. No, you should be going after Brady, solely Brady.
Well, but what I'm trying to make a difference between is Brady teasing Edelman for benching is different than Belichick calling out Gronk in front of the full team and saying, how's those resistance bands working for you now, Gronk? Like, that Bill means malice with his comments. And
sure.
Brady
that was
Edelman
just general
just teasing
ball
each
busting.
Other. Yes, exactly.
No, I'm talking about the whole Yoko comparison. That Yoko gets the blame, but really John Lennon is who empowered Yoko.
Yeah, and he was the most talented one, just like Brady is. So he can pretty much do what he wants, at least in my opinion.
Hmm. And he might be the most talented one. He's also 41.
He was also responsible for Revolution No. 9. You know that thing?
Yeah.
Remember that thing?
There's some duds there. Tom took that safety in that second Super Bowl against the Giants. It's not all pretty all the time.
He let her sing on Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, and now she legitimately has a career as an artist, and it's an absolute nightmare. There's a lot wrong there. But overall, the bigger body of work, he gets to pretty much do what he wants.
Alex Guerrero is the other woman.
Where's Chachi Laprette when we need him? Andrew,
he is.
Andrew in Grafton on the Yankees. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yes, I'd like to crap on Maz for take loading a week ago.
crap Maz, away. Go ahead.
Thank you. Maz, two questions for you. If J.D. Martinez struck out 5 times in one game, twice in the first 10 games, would you be saying he would be fine?
Nope.
No. Okay. At least you're honest. Question number two. If the Red Sox went 5-for-5, or 5-and-5, rather, in the first 10 games, would you be saying they would be fine?
Probably not.
All right. Well, I was hoping you'd not say that.
Andrew, I admit that I am more critical of the Red Sox than I probably should be. I will admit that to you. They're off to a good start. All I'm telling you is, don't bury the Yankees yet. Don't bury Stanton yet. In fact, I personally, and we are not going to disclose this now, I personally think I have uncovered the source of his problems.
We did. We've looked at some stuff with Stanton and his batting. That it's pretty dramatic.
Yep, and we are going to uncover it tomorrow with pictures.
Okay, here's an update from Murray. We come back and we reset the Bruins. We reset our Bruins thoughts from last night. I'm not going to ask you if last night concerns you, because frankly, how can it not? How could it not concern you the way that team played? The question, I think, is what's the degree of concern? A little or a lot? How could it be none? But we'll do that right after the update.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Panthers win the draw. They'll cradle it back of the net, loft it out to center ice. And this will float deep into the Bruins zone. And the horn will sound. On the final day and the final game of the regular season, the Florida Panthers victorious over the Boston Bruins 4-2. The Boston Bruins finish the season 50-20-12. And they will be the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. They will open the playoffs against the Toronto Maple Leafs here at TD Garden on Thursday.
All right, what a choke. That was a choke. That was a gag. Which happens. Okay? Good news is it's not the end of the world. You're still at home on Thursday to open the playoffs, and you had a good year, and things look good for the Bruins overall. So, like, the sky isn't totally falling. This is not Armageddon. However, I don't know how that game last night does not concern you. It may only concern you a little versus a lot, but how could it be a zero? And how can you not tie it to some of the past failures of this team in that exact spot? That exact spot. At home, heavily favored. A lot of cases, the playoffs, but some cases, just a regular season game that they're playing against an opponent that has nothing to play for. They have everything to play for, and so this is a layup. The last game of the year, 2 years ago against Ottawa. Last game of the year, the Matt Cook game against Pittsburgh in 2000. But there's a million of them. And then there's all the playoff games. Home against Carolina in 2009, home against Philadelphia the next year, home against Montreal 3 years ago now, 4 years ago, whenever that was. A million of them. Home against Washington the year after you win the Cup. All game sevens, all at home. And we watch the Bruins play in those games and we say they didn't show up. How is that possible that you get to a game like last night and they don't show up? And my working thesis is that it's not that they didn't show up, it's that they care too much and get too tight, and they gag it in these big games. It's a gag. It's a choke. It's not a thing about not caring or not showing up. I think they maybe care too much and get in their own heads. Because I see the way some of the guys played. I mean, clearly, a guy like Marchand is squeezing the stick too tight. And I think Pasternak is squeezing the stick too tight. And the goalie, once again, is not really there to bail you out. He's not the problem, but he ain't the solution either. And we've seen this story before. So, to sum up, the Bruins under Bruce Cassidy have been a revelation. They've been a great team, and I'm glad they changed coaches, and Cassidy's direction is the right direction. They're faster and younger, and more. They play a more vibrant game, and all of it. It's all because of Cassidy. So, God bless. Are they any different with the money on the table when it really matters? I don't know. Do you? Do you, Murray?
No, but I have to believe that this year's team is different. And I don't know, you make it almost sound like they're one of the big institutionalized, like, choking dogs in all of sports.
They
or
are
like the San Jose Sharks. The Sharks are a choking dog franchise in the NHL. The
Capitals.
Bruins, yeah, the Capitals. That's a dog franchise that's going to puke all over themselves at the worst possible moment.
Bruins are on the next rung down.
Well, they broke through. They obviously did in 2011. They got to the finals again and, you know, gagged at the end of 2013, but they're not as bad as those teams. And it's just different here. It's been different under Cassidy. It has been.
In regular season action. The Bruins are not choking dogs, but they're kind of choky. They're choky. They're chokish.
With as many games as they've played in March, it was bound to happen. They were going to have dead
legs.
In
the last game of the year against a team that had nothing to play
for?
I'm
small C concerned, Mike.
Okay,
small C concerned.
Little Jim worry.
Yeah, little Jim worry. Last night, with what was in front of them, you know, you get that top spot after Tampa loses on Saturday night. You end up with a better team in New Jersey, in theory. You know, that was in front of them. And they come out like that, dead for the first couple of periods. Like, that was like, oh, come on. Like, it was frustrating to watch. It really was. So, yeah, small C concerned.
So my only question for you is, then, what's the common denominator other than the uniform?
Captain.
Neely?
Captain. Goalie.
Okay, but Chara, they won it with Chara in 2011.
No, yes, they've absolutely broken through. No question. And I'm not taking that away from them. That's why they're not the Sharks and they're not one of those teams. So what is it? I don't know. I talked earlier about maybe the organization. There's something... I don't know, but they should look at it, because most of their big fails are at home. And, you know, again, starting with the goalie. We talked to a caller called up. He was right. I don't know if the caller phrased it like this, but Tuukka Rask in home elimination games, meaning the Bruins were facing elimination. Home elimination games in the playoffs is 1-4. Is 1-4 with a .872 save percentage, which blows. And a .332 goals against, which blows.
And the only game they won, again, was that Toronto game, that great comeback, and they gave up 4 goals in that game.
So the one game...
They won that game 5-4, I think.
The one elimination game that Tuukka Rask has won was the Toronto game, in which the Bruins had to score 3 goals in the final 5 minutes to force that thing to overtime. Hardly Ken Dryden stuff there from Tuukka Rask in that one game. Otherwise, in home elimination games, he is 1-4. With a .332 goals against and an .872 save percentage, those numbers are AHL, you suck numbers. If you want to talk about home and road, it's not much better. Career in elimination games in the playoffs, Rask is 2-4. With a .287 goals against and an .892 save percentage. And again, as we've discussed, in today's day and age, if you're under .900 in a save percentage, you blow. You blow. Well, that's not an NHL goalie.
What are the road numbers again? Read them again.
Well, overall. So, I mean, all I'm doing is at home, he's 1-4. Overall, he's 2-4. The only game you would add there was Game 5 last year in Ottawa when the Bruins won in double overtime. Sean Corrali scored off that face-off deflection. That's the only road elimination game they've had under Rask. So, like, this is what I'm telling you. It's not like they're losing. They're getting swept in these series or getting blown out. They're usually in big games at the end of the series, so they're right there with the other team. And in all these games, they're at home. And they come out and we say, boy, how do you come out in a game like that? I mean, again, so last year they lost at home to Ottawa in Game 6. In 2016, they didn't even make it to the playoffs because they got waxed 6-1 on the last day of the year at home against Ottawa when Tuukka didn't even make it to the game. So there's that one. In 2014-15, they lost their last 3 regular season games. They all happened to be on the road, so that doesn't play into my home thing. But in 2014-15, they lost their last 3 regular season games. I think they only needed one to qualify, and they didn't get one of them. 2014, I'm just going backwards now, year to year. They lost in the second round at home to Montreal, Game 7, at home. In 2013, they obviously beat Toronto at home in Game 7, but it took a freaking miracle of miracles. And then they lost at home to Chicago in Game 6 when they were up a goal with a minute left. Lost in regulation, somehow. The year before, they lost in Game 7 to Washington in the first round, at home. 2010, lost at home to Philly in Game 7 after going up 3-0. Tuukka was in net for that one. I also had the Matt Cook game. Remember the regular season Matt Cook game? We were expecting blood, and the Bruins are going to come out and show them. You know, I think they lost 4-0. It's just a total no-show, you know, wet fart game. Year before that, they lost to Carolina in the second round, Game 7, at home.
Okay, what year is that?
2010. I'm sorry, Carolina was 09. Carolina was 09.
I mean, so that is like... So listen, I hear you.
So this is unfair for me to go back that far?
I mean, 09's a lifetime ago, I feel
well,
like.
Well, I just don't think it's any...
Chara, Bergeron.
Okay, but again, they won in 11.
They did. They aren't over. So I told you, they're not the San Jose Sharks. They're not the Washington Capitals.
Okay, so I would have two... Like, to me, I'll keep it to the Tuca era. So, to me, maybe it's one of two things. Maybe they don't have confidence in the goalie. When it really comes down to it, maybe they don't have confidence in the goalie. Does that affect the way they play? I don't know. I'm just asking.
Does that explain Marchand? Because Murray's right to point this out. You know, he didn't look the same guy. This isn't about just last night. In his last six games, Brad Marchand, no goals, one assist, minus eight.
Well, and what does he have in the last postseason games? 18? He's got one goal?
One goal in his last 18 postseason games. So this should be independent of Tuukka Rask. What happens to Marchand in these games? Is it because Marchand doesn't care? Is it because Marchand doesn't have the passion? No, it's just the opposite. And I'd say the same thing about Chara and Bergeron. Those guys care greatly. They almost care too much. Like, I've been told, like, there's elements of the team that need to go out and get drunk. Like, you guys need to go and let it all hang out because you're all too serious.
So this is the only part we differ with.
I was told that once. Remember when they had all those bad home losses? It was one of these years. And someone said to me, I was wondering, why'd they keep losing at home? Is that because they hit it hard when they go home? They go out too much at home? And the guy said to me, you know what? These guys need to go out, except for one guy. This is when Sagan was still here. Yeah. The guy says, no, this team needs to go out, except for one guy. He needs to stay home. But the rest, so it's like too serious, too tight, too something, too, because I think that they're, I don't know, I feel like in these games and they get too tight. And I still don't know if that's going to be any different under Bruce Cassidy than it was under Claude Julien. I don't know if that's going to be any different.
Well, it's a legitimate concern. Again,
last night has to scare you.
Well, look, they lost four of their last five. They had it in their hands before they gave it back to Tampa. Then they get another crack, and they blew that one, too. So, I don't know. I am willing to judge this team separately. That's all I'm telling you. Okay, I don't love the matchup in the first round, but I'm willing to judge them separately, the players separately, the coach separately. And I also wonder, I don't know, in a big game in hockey, like a game seven, sometimes I wonder if you're better off being on the road.
Oh, this team? Yeah.
Yep, but I mean, even any team. Like, if the opponent scores the first goal in game seven, the visiting team, that home crowd oftentimes can get very nervous. And all of a sudden, it's like...
Yeah, maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy here. We're sort of if you follow the team closely over the years, you can't be surprised by last night. You can be pissed, but you're not surprised. And maybe that just permeates the building. One goes in early last night, and it's like, oh, here we go again. And it just, the feeling permeates the building, and it seeps down to the players. It's just that whole thing.
I don't know. I mean, 2011, they won Game 7 on the road, right? The Vancouver crowd did what the Bruins crowd usually does. Like, and that team kind of turtled. I don't know. It's a toughie, but I'm willing to judge these guys on their own.
Last night was a gag.
Of course, if they gagged on Thursday, then I'll believe it.
What a gag. What a gag. So how does that not concern you? It's the only question, is it a little or a lot? We discuss with you. Long commercial free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And as first reported by Evan Drellick of NBC Sports Boston, Xander Bogaerts of the Red Sox is headed to the 10-day disabled list related to a bone in his foot, according to a source. It's his foot rather than an ankle issue. So Xander Bogaerts headed to the 10-day disabled list. And doing a little research behind the scenes here, it sounds like Zhu Weilin is not in the Pawtucket Red Sox lineup tonight, so he's likely going to be called up.
No shock there.
Matt, your thoughts on the injury?
Well, I'm worried about it again. I saw Drellick tweet this out late yesterday that it wasn't something that happened on the fall. It was something that happened when Bogaerts' foot landed, and I'm worried about it. To me, it feels like a stress or an impact type of injury. Now, so the question is it a ligament? Is it a bone? Like, we'll find out more here, I'm presuming, as we go. But, you know, feet are delicate. You know, it's a delicate thing. He didn't roll an ankle. If you watch a replay, he didn't roll it. And then I've heard people say, well, did he slide on it and hit it on the top lip of the dugout? Didn't feel that way to me. He went in there pretty smooth. I suppose there's always a chance that when he landed, you know, you're wearing spikes, maybe you hit the dugout floor and then you roll an ankle. But he came up and he was walking okay until he all of a sudden started putting more weight on it. And, you know, I worry about some sort of fracture in the foot or Liz Frank injury or something like that.
Tough timing. He was hitting the crap out of the ball.
He was playing great.
He's looked like a completely different player. And just, I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into that grand slam that's still flying, you know, over Somerville.
No.
That he hit on Saturday.
You can't read too much into that, Murray. Go ahead.
But I also think that there's a, I'm the man now. Like, the way he's just looked, there's a confidence there. Like, just one of these young guys. I've been waiting here since Ortiz is retired. Well, why don't you step up and take a leadership role? I don't need you to, like, be loud and actish and, you know, take the bat to the phone if you have a bad game. But just show me. And Bogaerts has been showing me. And that grand slam and how he's been, you know, the approach at the plate overall, like, he's looked like I'm the man now. And to lose him right now, like, it's just, it sucks in terms of timing.
So, again, the great, you know, everybody focuses on the grand slam, and it was the way he swung it. He swung the bat with authority. The intention was to drive it somewhere and hit it far and hard. And usually all he does, you know, he spanks a single the other way. 6'1", 210. That was so irritating about him. And now all of a sudden he's playing like he should be playing. And here you go. Now you're going to be without him for a while.
All right, so this is just tweeted by Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. Shortstop Xander Bogaerts underwent an X-ray yesterday and an MRI today at MGH, revealing a small crack in the talus bone in his left ankle. The injury is non-displaced and will not require surgery. Bogaerts, who was placed in the 10-day DL today, expected to miss approximately 10 to 14 days. But this is the Red Sox.
What's the talus bone?
Well, can you... Is it the ankle? Is it the foot? What is it?
I'm looking.
It's not the knob, is it?
The talus is basically on the front of the ankle. That makes sense. Like, can I point it to you?
Let's see it, Maz. Whip it out.
So, like, right here.
Got it.
Right in here.
Yep.
So it's at the, you know, where your...
Shin.
At where your foot starts to turn, maybe just a little beyond the top of the foot, but close to your leg. And so... You know, I mean, I don't know the history of the injury. I, you know, I don't know a lot about it. But I think you said this earlier, I don't think it's wrong, that when you're dealing with feet, particularly at a shortstop, who's going to be on his feet a lot, not a great injury.
I'd rather have a sprained ankle than a bone, ligament, foot, and an Achilles. All those things always feel worse than just a sprained ankle. The high ankle is a whole other animal. But just that generic sprained ankle, you know, or ankle injury, I don't know. So anyway, there's that on Xander Bogaerts. So the Red Sox are on the board as well as the Rob Gronkowski latest, the Bruins from last night, and your concern level going into the playoffs. Red Sox, Yankees coming up, whatever you want. Reentry Monday, everything on the board. Chris in Rockland on the Pats. Hi, Chris. Chris. Okay, babe, you got to call us back. You got to turn down your radio, turn down your TV, and then call us back again. Ricky in the car on the Bees. Hi, Ricky.
Hi.
Hi, Ricky. Go ahead.
I'm just really concerned with Tuukka Rask going to the playoffs, and I want to bring up a point that people often forget. Martin Jones is on this team a couple years ago when we traded for him, and then we traded him like right away back, and he's actually gone on a successful run with the Sharks in the playoffs a couple years ago, going to the Stanley Cup. What are your thoughts on that?
So, yeah, they never intended to keep Martin Jones. I mean, they should have, but they never intended to. They were going to flip him immediately, and they did. And they got a first-round pick for him, so they actually did well with that sort of move, except... They've hitched their wagon to Rask, and is he the right guy? I think that's still debatable. I do. I mean, he's good. He's obviously good, and he's good enough to get you to a certain level. But, you know, last night is just sort of that classic Tuukka Rask game, Maz, where I say, I'm not going to blame him. The whole team was tight. The whole team looked like crap for two periods. It's not the goalie's fault that the team looks like crap. So he won the problem. But he also won the solution. Like, could he bail him out a little bit?
But you can find a lot of guys who aren't the problem and aren't the solution.
Exactly. So then what are we doing? So then why are we paying him $7 million? And why does everyone keep telling how great he is? When he's just sort of like along for the ride. When the team's good, he's good. When the team's bad, he's bad. But he's not going to bail you out of a bad situation. Like, you know, those first three goals. First one is screened, maybe even a little tipped, you know. So, okay. Second one, Vetrano put it right underneath the bar, right by his ear, tough spot. The third one, the guy's wide open in the right circle. So, like, none of them are his fault, quote-unquote, but can I get a save on one of them? Can I just get a save on him?
I mean, to me, the third and fourth goals were the ones I liked the least because the first two were good shots. And the third one, I know he was moving, but I think he was there in time to stop it. And it went under him or just, you know.
Oh, yeah, it went right underneath him.
Like, You know, so that and the fourth one I absolutely hated. You know, you felt like they still had a chance to pull one out there.
But, you know, so Rask is, an easy place to start and end. But he's not. It's a whole team thing. The whole team has had trouble in these spots. They're favored. They're at home in a big game. And we come out of the game saying, how did they come out like that? Something didn't look right there. And how many times are we going to see that? Time after time, year after year. Sean, let's grab Tyron in Tennessee on Rob Gronkowski. Quickly, Tyron. Tyron. Okay, babe, you guys got to be ready to go. Rocco in Saugus. Hi, Rocco.
Hey, what's up? Listen, I just want to talk about the pass real quick. I don't know. I always felt like, it was always Brady. It's the success that was the reason why we had all these championships. It's always Brady, like 80% Brady, 20% Belichick. And, Belichick, for me, my personal opinion of Belichick, I think the guy's read the Art of War too many times. He's just too general. Like, he thinks it's like a general pattern or something like that. And the thing on Garoppolo, do you really think if Garoppolo stayed and played, do you think the Patriots would have paid him that money the same way that the 49ers did?
No. Nope. They would not give him that kind of contract, but it would have. They would have kept him. They would have given him something less and made him take something less. He would have taken something less. And, yeah, you'd still have him. It's not like he's going to bolt here. You'd let him go.
I mean, they had a history of doing that with the agent.
Exactly. They would have gotten a deal done with him. I don't know if it would have looked exactly like Garoppolo's. I mean, Garoppolo's in San Francisco. But, no, if they had kept him, he would have been here. That's it. They would have figured that out. Don't say it, Mayos. Here's an update from Murray. Again, the latest breaking news on Xander Bogaerts and his ankle from yesterday's injury. Those details, and we're back with your final hour right after this.